Never go out alone. For more information and more safety tips, go to lifesaving.bc.ca.
UBC Music Initiative is a student-led club that aims to connect students' music with their community. We host monthly socials for our members to perform in a welcoming environment and to feel more confident in their music abilities. In addition, we offer students on and off campus performances that allow them to share their talent and passion while giving back to the community. To learn more, take the initiative by liking us on Facebook or emailing us at ubcmusicinitiative@gmail.com.
Next Queen's Patrick is two stations away from Twitterstrom. My welcome, the coast
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up is, of course, the White Noise Show. Usually it's a half hour sketch comedy followed by commentary, but tonight we're doing something a bit different. Tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to have a bit of a chat about what we've been doing over the last 4 weeks, why we haven't been here. What we've been doing is we've been doing a live show. That's right, we've been adapting our sketch shows from the radio to a live setting, and we managed to record it, and so we're going to play the sort of, I guess, the best of the best tonight. We're going to play some stuff.
Best
80%. We're going to play some different bits from that. And we're also going to be chatting with some of the actors and, I guess, the writer. And that's me. So
yeah, I wonder. Talking to with myself. Only you by virtue of you having chosen all the sketches.
He's still sore about it. He's still sore. Okay. Well, we'll
chat with you.
All right. So I think first, have you got any requests for the first one?
Just do them in order, man.
Do them in order. That's no fun.
Well, we chose that to do the show for that particular reason, because it'd be a good flow.
But
it'd be a good tempo, a good rhythm.
Okay, well, we'll start with a short but sweet then.
Let's do it.
Okay, all right, let's start with this one.
Next up, people are arguing. Oh, just pick one, Mexican or Italian.
We had Italian last week.
Well, my first choice was Chinese.
Ew, no way. Doesn't satisfied.
Greek?
No, that's disgusting. Let's go Spanish.
No, I get stuff stuck in my teeth.
Let's go German.
Nah, too fatty, man. Oh, God.
Thai?
Nah, I never know what you're going to get with a Thai.
Fine, let's just get Japanese. You can't go wrong with Japanese. It's consistent and always satisfying.
All right, fine. Tonight we'll get a Japanese hooker.
that's funny. One has to wonder what the context of that last line was.
Yeah, because they laughed over the setup, so they were probably like, what the hell was that? So for those who didn't know, the full joke was, I've always thought about going on the game. I hear the tips are great, but it's when they put the rest in, it hurts.
Hey. Which basically gets you to exactly where you thought you were without the setup.
You just hear the tip part.
It is funnier with the setup.
It does help.
Makes more sense.
Yeah, so that was myself and Ken, who's with us now.
Hello.
Yeah, that was... I mean, it's a weird one, that one, in that there's not really... Well, it's weird because, like, it's funny the second time through the rest of it if you know what the finale is, but the first time through you don't know the finale, so that it's, I don't know, it's a weird joke.
Because you have to connect the dots halfway, like, most of the way through it, and then get to the end and go, oh, I get it, and then you... consciously, sort of subconsciously, try to reconnect the dots going backwards, even as the show moves forwards.
Yeah, no, it's a fun little thing, just because you're kind of going through it, being like, oh, I guess they're being racist, I suppose, because you know you hit on a couple of points, you know, and then you realize, oh, they're talking about hookers, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking.
It's all okay then.
It's all okay, right? Fuckers. It's fine.
Yeah. We're like racism, prostitution. I kind of want a similar level.
Yeah, I know, right? So. Like ordering food. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, anyways, I'm going to shut up now and cover my face.
Oh, dear. All right, let's play another one. Let's go
Wait, are you trying to say that you have anything more to say about that?
I don't know. It's quite a short but sweet piece. Do you have anything more you'd like to add?
Well, Ken? I feel like we can really psychoanalyze that and sort of think... I mean, Ken, what do you think the writer was thinking about when he wrote that scene?
I'm hungry tonight.
I think that must have been it. And the idea was, oh, I'm going to use that and then subvert people's expectations by making it about something that's not food. Mm-hmm. It's got to be hookers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean... I suppose, yeah, it's like, what do you do when you're ordering a hooker? I don't know. I've never ordered a hooker.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I suppose it's akin
we'll have
to ordering
one hooker,
food.
Please.
Yeah. Can I? And I mean, and when and it's also that idea of, like, well, if you're buying flesh, literally, yeah. in a sense, then talking about it in such sort of...
like, blatant terms.
Yeah,
right?
and like, quite sort of... like almost devaluing the person, like it. Well, that's kind of what you're doing when you're buying a hooker. Like, you know, it's
yeah.
what it is. It's, you know, it's not really the most savory thing that people do. So,
but I mean, you do the same with food, though, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're still buying a service and labor and all
yeah,
those.
Yeah, you're doing the whole shebang.
The funny thing is to imagine you holding a newspaper and just seeing the
it
various
make you
ads
sick.
That are like single Russian women in your area, like all the different weird taglines that come with each specific like subset of the prostitution industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Skinny Thai girls, big boobs, want to have fun? Like, what?
Well, you don't know what you're going to get with the Thai, right?
I was at a Russell Brand concert when he was here. He was playing at the River Rock, and he took out the Georgia Strait and just called up a number in the back on, like, the sex page, and it was for a transvestite German prostitute.
Oh, my.
And then, like, started just talking to it on stage, like, Mike, it wasn't, like, the funniest thing, but it was just weird.
But it is interesting, because it does make you think, though, so again, touching back on this issue of sort of, like, incorporating racism into it, but a lot of those adverts genuinely want you to take the product because it is German or because it is a certain kind of thing. So in saying, oh, I want Thai, Mexican, Japanese, of course the joke isn't about that. The joke is kind of setting up for the food and then subverting that. But it almost sort of makes sense because, like, yeah, that's how they advertise.
Yeah, yeah.
You advertise Chinese food as Chinese food, right? You don't advertise it as food because if you advertise it as food, everybody's going to be like, what's
yeah.
food?
And I think it's easy to go, well, I mean, you don't really consider race when you're trying to buy a hooker or whatever, but actually that's how they advertise and so that's how you might do it. I mean, I don't do it, but...
Yeah.
If I was to, exactly, I might go, well, I guess I would like the, you know, single Russian women in my area or whatever. I don't know. So like I said, there's lots to say about that. It's a good one. I think we started on a good note.
Okay. Mm. Well, let's continue.
We can only go downhill from here.
Yeah. Here's one with Connor
in. I think we started
in,
on the downhill.
So we can feel less butthurt. Here we go.
I thought the point of Subway was to make a sandwich your way, but they get really pissed when I climb over the counter. Next up tonight is a bit about school. For some, it was the best days of their lives because they suck at being adults.
Mr. Neville, thanks for coming in.
All right, what is it this time? I bet it's Ginny. She is always fighting.
No, nothing like that.
She kicked the shit out of that last teacher.
Yeah, that was hilarious. But no. It's about your youngest, Harry.
Harry? But he's the good one. All his teachers love him.
Yeah, that's the problem. Well, Harry is, how can I put this delicately, is dressing far too sexy.
Pardon?
How can I say this better? Harry is...
What are you trying to say?
What I'm trying to say is Mr. Collins is finding it very hard to concentrate with that gorgeous son of yours just flaunting his perfect pecs in front of him. Harry's got to cover up.
Shouldn't Mr. Collins be the one controlling himself?
It's not just Mr. Collins, though. I mean, it's the janitors, it's the lunchtime assistants, it's the girls in his class. I mean, they're all just gagging for him.
I really think that's their problem, not his.
I really wish it was. I honestly, genuinely really wish it was. But you have to understand, they're just giving in to their animalistic urges. I mean, come on. Have you never been turned on by a young, sexy boy?
No.
Okay.
But if I was, I would keep it to myself. Now, what's Mr. Collins' first name? I'd like to have a word with
you. I can't divulge that.
Why not?
Because I don't know what it is.
Oh, for goodness sake, this is getting ridiculous. My son should have to be ashamed of his body because your staff are a bunch of pervs.
They are not pervs. The inquiry proved that, okay? Now, if you just have Harry put on, I don't know, like a nice sweater, you know, something like this. This is nice. And a nice pair of jeans to cover up those lovely glutes. God, I can see where it gets. Everything would be fine.
No. Harry is free to express himself as he sees fit.
I'm really sorry you feel this way, honestly.
You'll have to excuse me. I've got to get back to work now.
Okay.
These two dudes aren't going to sell themselves.
All right, there we go. So Connor definitely has some thoughts on that sketch. He's just rambling off. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just wondering what the difference would be if you played that more deadpan.
If I played it more deadpan?
Yeah, because obviously the way you play it, which is fabulous. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. It's really great. But obviously you lead into the role and you're being a little bit kind of creepy, a little bit touchy. I do wonder what the difference would be if it was as pure deadpan. Just pure, I'm very sorry, but he just needs to cover up his glutes.
I mean, you're right. Because, well, originally that was kind of more how it was played.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of morph it into a bit more of a touchy, a bit more of a...
Yeah, that was your idea. Let's not forget.
And I think it was
funny.
And
it works. Yeah, it works. No. It adds, and I think it adds more to it. And it looks like if we were being critiqued on our directing and we'd be given more points for having that than them just sitting there. And,
yeah, I mean...
You know, like... I just think there was more to it
I agree. It's just interesting. I wonder how the energy and the perception of it, the interpretation would have been if it had been more deadpan. Because I think in doing what we did, I think it loses... Not... I don't say loses because I don't think that's the right word. But I think the effect of the satire might be slightly diminished by the kind of the creepiness or the overt nature of the teacher. Whereas by keeping them a bit more deadpan, it might not necessarily be as laugh out loud funny. But I think the satire hits home a bit stronger, maybe.
Absolutely. I think you're right that if we go for realism, it can be more effective actually than absurdism. Absurdism is more entertaining, I would think, but not necessarily as thought-provoking. If you don't bother to like,
yeah,
into
and you can
it.
Easily you can easily look at it and go, so what just happened? So the teacher's telling the son to cover up. That doesn't usually. It's the other way around. It's the girl who's covering up because If you look, if you think about it for 2 seconds, you do get it. Yeah. But I'm just kind of curious to see what the difference would have been if we had the two shows, if we just said one deadpan and one, well, assuming that it can equal audience level, which we
it would have been a nice to see the difference in that. I definitely agree because you see so much difference between say a different performance on one night and say something different changes. You know, you get to see that that change that happens.
But I feel the style we did it in actually though highlights a second layer, which is the objectification of the of Mr. Neville as well, which is something you wouldn't have had in the deadpan version in the grope, like, because that's obviously something you can't see on the while listening in the radio version, but we as I'm saying these lines, I get up and sort of stroke Connor's character a few times in the more creepier lines. And that sort of adds to that sort of same idea. So even though doing it the more absurdist way, we lose some of that. We maybe gain something.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that piece. I think that piece raises a lot of good questions for comedy and comedy writing and stage comedy, and it definitely introduces the physical element which we want to use, especially on our debut live performance, because we don't want to be accused of being too flat.
And
there's definitely wins to be had there. I think it went down really quite well. So I'm not saying at all it was we made a wrong choice. There's an interesting thought to see maybe in another iteration of it how we do it in more deadpan.
You can also incorporate both sides of things. I mean, your delivery could have been deadpan, but your body, your physicality you didn't have to lose that at all. You could have easily been stroking him with a deadpan look on your face.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. It could be. It'd be so bloody creepy at that point, though.
Very true.
I couldn't believe though, because the entire way through the rehearsal of that sketch, I couldn't look Connor in the face and say the line, "Have you never been turned on by a young, sexy boy?" I couldn't say it because I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever said.
Yeah, you were convinced it was the funniest line. We heard a lot about that line.
And then in neither performance did we get a single laugh off it. I think people were too scared to laugh at it, even if they thought it was funny. Like, it was just, it's such an extreme line, but I thought it was hilarious.
I think, like, for us, it was so funny because we weren't taking it as seriously. You know, like, we saw it as just like, this is just a funny line.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and the fact that you have to look a guy in the face and tell him this, like, as straight-faced as possible, you know, have you never been turned on by...
See, I can't even... See,
I do wonder whether that's, like, you know, whether people... Yeah, they... So certainly in a more liberal place like Vancouver, people tend to be try to be more mindful, more self-conscious and aware of other people and how they might interpret things. I wonder if that's, like... Those words are a little bit of a trigger for, like, oh, that sounds a little bit sort of homosexual, a bit gay.
Yeah.
And then that's totally fine. Like, that's nothing funny to be said about that.
Mm-hmm.
Losing the actual contextualization of the fact that it's, like, a young, like, 12-year-old? I mean, that's kind of weird. It's like some, kind of almost like a pedophilia kind of joke.
Yeah.
But I feel like... I don't know. Yeah, I'm surprised as well that it wouldn't have been funny. So, yeah, young, sexy, but the way you sort of say yeah.
Yeah, and just, like, it's just the fact that he's taking it as such a plausible scenario.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And that's what makes it so absurd, because it's an underage child he's asking him if he's ever been turned on by, which is, yeah.
At that point, it's like to his father.
Yeah.
On top of that.
And the thing is, it doesn't actually necessarily say Harry in particular. That example, have you been turned on by a young, sexy boy, is just so generalizing. A total hypothetical. It's not saying, have you never been turned on by a young, sexy Harry?
Which no, might it's not meant to be his son, obviously. Exactly.
But even like... Any one individual where it seems a bit more intimate, a bit more, there's a bit more emphasis to that. When it's just a broad young sexy boy, that really just leaves it's so broad that it doesn't actually hone in on any one person. It is very, it's just the absurdity of the statement that this person clearly thinks that that's a very
that's very normal.
Okay, let's move on. I'm gonna play next my mum's favorite sketch. I think that's appropriate.
New from the people who brought you Viagra, the Viagra for babies, and and of course, Prozac, the pill that makes you Prozac Efron. The only pill that will make you give a shit about what others say. Using our patented formula that we brought up a bloke in the pub, we turn your disinterest into the veneer of compassionate empathy. Your girlfriend's cat died. Pop in an eye care. Your sister had another baby. Pop in an eye care. Your mum tries talking to you. Pop in an eye care. Turn your apathy into simulated sympathy. They won't notice. You won't care. But it will sure as shit seem like it. Side effects may include boredom, beards, beads, bee beards, belching, back knee, bathing, basting, begging, blogging, bleaching, bad breath, bacon breath, bacon breast, and anal leakage.
Now available in all good retailers and in the car park after, if you meet me later.
All right, there we go. That was the eye care sketch, which, of course, is one of our long-running ideas of fake advertisements. It was funny because there's obviously that line in there that's like, your mum wants to talk to you, pop in an eye care. And I thought my mum, you know, might get quite wound up by that or, you know, offended. And she thought it was hilarious, which I thought was good on her.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, my mum was in the audience as well, and I could hear her laughing, so I know she thoroughly enjoyed it. And, like, I even asked her after the show, like, did you find anything offensive? She's like, no, this was all in good fun. This was all in good humor. So...
Well, yeah, because, I for the most part, we do our best to not punch down. That's always the thing in comedy, which is we either make fun of our peers or those above us.
Mm-hmm.
And...
So, Viagra, being Viagra for babies...
That's making fun of pharmaceutical companies with terrible choice in product lines.
Ah. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
I thought you were serious about babies needing Viagra, because I was going to wholeheartedly agree. It really is an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, erectile dysfunction in young women is awful. I mean, I think we need to fix that.
Yeah. I mean, even the ergonomic crack pipe is not making fun of crack smokers. It's making fun of people who are trying to make like
money off crack smokers.
Yeah, bad products, you know.
I mean, like that is that's a lot of the pharmaceutical industry, though, is just there's a lot of bad products out there that don't necessarily work, you know. And I mean, and there's also so many of these products are placebo products.
Yeah.
Well, this is honestly something that blew my mind when I moved to North America, was that they have prescription medication adverts on television, and it's not Canadian networks, but it's the American networks.
Yeah.
But in Europe, it's illegal because you're not a doctor. You did not go to med school for 4 years, so you have no right or education to allow you to make informed decisions about your medicine, your medical care. That's why we have doctors.
Yeah.
So why the hell should you tell your doctor about anything? No, you should shut up and listen.
Well, I agree. I totally agree with that. But then a lot of the time, the doctors of today, you know, I don't know, like, there's very good doctors, and then you have those doctors that aren't in it for anything but the money.
But they're getting less and less, because the way that you now get into med school has evolved over the years, so that it's more personality based, and it's more about you have to prove that you want to be there. Mm-hmm. It's not just about marks. You have to be volunteering. You have to, you know, you really put yourself, you know, are you already exposed to it and you know what it is?
Yes.
Because it's a tough job. It's, you know, it's not a good job to do for the money.
Well, it's a lot of the times, like, you have these people that go into nursing, you know, and, you know, nursing in Vancouver is a big thing. You know, I know several people from my old high school. They want to go into nursing at Langara, for instance, and it's a big program. A lot of people are waiting to get in. Now, my mom, who is an RN, she found that a lot of the nurses that are coming out nowadays, they don't have personality at all. They just go in, do the job. And when you're working as an RN or as a doctor, you need to have a good personality. You know, you need to be able to be personable with these people, because if you're not personable, these people aren't going to enjoy their time at a hospital where they're going to be for 24/7.
Well, they're going to anyway.
Yeah.
Good point.
But it's a valid observation that, yeah, you're in a service industry, and in many ways, the heightened and intense and intimate nature of many of the illnesses and stuff that people get, you do want to be able to be reassuring and commanding and helpful, and you don't want to just seem like someone who's really dismissive of everything. Yeah.
And, like, I totally get you have a bad day, you know, like, you know, not saying, like, you know, we don't have bad days where we don't, like, we feel off or something, but, you know, working in a service industry, you know, you still have to put on a bit of a smile sometimes, you know, no matter how you're feeling. Leave your shit at the door and just do your job.
Yeah, it is.
No one wants an angry
It is an interesting
down.
Thought, yeah. though. The idea of, like, okay, so a lot of doctors, my experience with doctors in Canada, I've never been to, like, any specialist. I've never been in the hospital for any, like, particularly life-threatening or serious illness. But I've gone to the doctors a couple times. It's like, oh, check this out, whatever.
Your face has always looked like that.
I was hoping no one would notice. But whenever I've gone to the, and this is perhaps the UBC hospital, so this is already an area with a large population and probably not enough doctors. But whenever I go there, it's always like a 5-minute thing. And as much as they seem interested, I never get the impression that they genuinely care about what I'm doing.
That's why you need a GP.
Yeah, I kind of get that. I mean, if you're seeing, like, there's always, you have to book in advance by 3 weeks. I'm like, I'm glad I only have, like, a little rash or whatever. If it's like
nothing serious,
bigger, like, I'd be a bit worrisome. But, like, the fact that they know they only have, like, 15 minutes to see you, and it's like either refer to the emergency, or refer to specialists, or, like, prescribe you something.
Yeah.
I just feel like that isn't enough time to get to the gist of what your issues are. And as non-educated people who aren't doctors and who will say, oh, I had this illness, much like Norman in a sketch that maybe we're going to play later, it can be tough to describe what your symptoms are as accurately as the doctor could desire. And so I do think, in one way, having the internet available and being able to search for your symptoms and be able to search for perhaps certain medicines and stuff that could be helpful towards the dots you're making and you're linking in your head when you're looking at the computer versus the dots you're trying to get the doctor to connect as you...
Yeah. Yeah.
Nervously
Except
express
that
yourself.
You then just end up thinking you've got cancer.
invariably, you are correct.
Well,
yeah.
No, I have a story about that. Whereas a friend of mine, he goes to another university, and he totally, like, he busted his finger in a fight. Okay, like, he totally, like,
did he win?
Yeah, he won. Yeah, but he busted his thumb in a fight. You know, and it was a sprain. But he called me up when I was on vacation, and he goes, like, dude, I swear, like WebMD says I dislocated my thumb. I'm like, can you move your thumb? He's like, yeah, I totally can move it, but I swear I dislocated it. I'm like, if you dislocated your thumb, you wouldn't be able to move it. You'd be in excruciating pain.
How are you
going
me?
To the hospital? Exactly. You've only sprained the damn thing. It's just like, but WebMD. I'm like, WebMD, no shit. It's one of those things that's going to tell you have cancer no matter what you do. And like, and this is something now that you're finding a lot now. Like, I want to go back to the ads because on TV, a lot of the ads are now saying, go to your doctor and ask him if this is for you.
That's what I'm saying. This is that sort of bullshit where, yeah, no. Because if you needed it, he'd tell you or she'd
exactly.
tell you. They don't. Yeah, that's their job, not yours.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, like, it's totally fine if you're going like, hey, you know, I saw this thing on TV. It was saying certain, like, it was saying, like, if I could, like, say, like, I was displaying certain symptoms and they say I should take this. Do you think I should or not? And the doctor can be like, no. It's that simple.
And hopefully they'd be, no, because you don't have these several symptoms. Therefore,
yeah.
That's clearly not it. Therefore, I'm not giving you this. I'm going to give you this other thing, which you didn't know about because it wasn't, didn't have the money to get advertised
exactly.
on TV. That actually is much more appropriate condition.
Yeah. Self-diagnosis is totally like, don't do it. Don't self-diagnose yourself.
Well, thanks, Dr. Ken. All right.
No worries.
let's do another one. Here we go.
It is. You know, I used to be this typical misogynistic homophobic gangster rap.
Right.
But I've been reborn!
Oh, in what sense?
Well, since my last album, Shake It and I'll Spank It. You know, I met the shorty who showed me the error of my ways. She was like all up in my grill. And damn, she was right. I mean, my lyrics have supported this idea of women as second class citizens, you know? Like they're below men. I've been acting like such a little bitch. Wait, no, I mean, a pussy. No, sorry. There are so many insults at me being a woman.
Isn't that crazy? No, we noticed.
Well, it's all in the past for me now. My new album reflects a more enlightened perspective.
Eloquently put.
Thank you. I'm completely changed. Now I go down to girls without them even asking. You know what I'm saying?
That is sadly much more impressive than it should be. Moving on, what other themes do you reflect on in your new LP?
Well, one of my tracks called Liberating Labias is all about how women have all this stigma surrounding them, you know? How they like to get down. It's like, if she wants to get down, let her get down. But it goes both ways. Maybe my bro doesn't want to get down. Sometimes a homie just wants to cook.
Yes, and you cover that concern much more fully in your new track, Homies Don't Have to Be Hoes.
For sure. Ironically, that is a great track to bang to.
He's not wrong.
You know, another thing I learned, or Shorty let me in on, is how ladies don't always like to be stared at in public. You know, just because they're showing some skin. That idea really inspired my track. Can't stare, gotta strafe.
Oh, yes. My personal favorite lyric from that one is, if she sees your eyes, don't let them be on her thighs.
Oh, that is gangster gold for sure. You know, another thing I learned was how ladies can do all the stuff that dudes can do, too. You know, like science, politics, rolling blunts. I talk about it in the track, booty and brains, you know? They got mad skills, some of them. Of course, some of them can't do shit. Well, for every one of them, I got a bro who thinks Gandhi was a rapper.
You also touch upon the issue of disproportional pay.
Huh?
A song about women getting underpaid to do the same job as a man.
Oh, right, yeah. You're talking about, where's my ladies, cheddar?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That track I'm very proud of. Plus, I got the music I sampled super cheap because some lady wrote it. Oh, crap, I gotta fix that shit.
Do you think that other rappers will follow suit? Is this the evolution of rap as we know it?
Nah. You know, for one, there are already some rappers doing as I do. Except none of you buy the records because you're too busy listening to this bullshit, fan-bashing mainstream chug. But that will eventually change. Not until our parents are all dead.
Well, thank you for joining me tonight, Lil P. And you folks can pick up Lil P's new album, I Just Wanna Bang Empowered Women, online, on the retailer.
go. That was the rap search with Karen Morley. Yeah.
Good job, Karen.
Woo.
Yeah.
Little P.
So that was Caitlin and Nick in that sketch. I don't know. That was one we wrote really early.
That was like first, second, third episode, wasn't it?
Maybe the fourth.
You think fourth? Okay.
Maybe fourth at the most. Yeah. And but yeah, I still enjoy that one. Like,
it was it's good. It's cool. It's like much like school teachers. It has a good satire to it. It has a good role reversal or a good secondary perspective or a new perspective on it. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Because the character is, again, like some absurdist, but actually, in a way, it still retains a caricature of real life. It's interesting to balance that satire with the with some of the great sort of one-liners you've written in there, and the performance that Nick and Caitlin obviously give the sketch.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, he's an important character because I think there is this fairly major subset of guys out there who do want to do the right thing and want to be on the right side of the feminist ideals,
yeah,
but perhaps just are a little ignorant what that truly means and what it means to be there, and you know, but are trying their best and maybe deserve a little bit of sympathy for their attempts, even if they fuck up. Like, it's not because they're bad people.
Yeah,
they just are a little ignorant perhaps to situation.
I think ignorance and uneducation, yeah, are like two of the biggest things that go together. Mm. You know, because you're not being like,
well, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, a lot of the time you're not being like, you go to elementary school, you're not being taught about, you know, how you should treat people, or sometimes you're not, and you know, teachers forget, you know, they get so caught up with their whatever they're teaching that they forget, you know, to teach you about human basics.
Well, I do think there's a little more focus now towards that, but it's, you know, when I was a kid, which of course was like when I was in kindergarten, was like 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now. And there was definitely a sense of like, you're boys and you're girls.
Yeah, totally.
And you do boy things and you go play with the girl toys, and that's going away. And that's what it is it's about normalizing equality from a very young age.
I mean, I remember talking with a friend of mine, and her parents, they didn't do any of that. They didn't teach her about boy girl things. They just let her do what she wanted to do. You know, what she wanted to do. She liked certain things. They let her like those things. You know, it wasn't like, you're a boy, you have to like robots. Mm. And you're a girl, you have to like Barbie dolls.
Is it a have to, or is it just like a, you'll probably, and so I'm going to give you those. And
but it's also like, I don't remember, but I've been told about being 3 years old and picking up the handbag at preschool, and then they laughed at me.
Because they thought you're a thief.
And they were like, that's funny. You know, he's playing with the handbag and laughed. And then, of course, there's a small child. You go, okay, so I don't do that. That's not what I do. So it's not even like they're saying it in a nasty way, but you still are conditioning the child.
Your critical
that is not your
TV
behavior.
TV as well does that. TV as well conditions your children. You know, if you watch TV, you know, there's a lot of that segregation that still happens on TV. You know, you watch girls, and girls are always looking pretty or something like that, and they always make fun
or
of the ugly
looking
girl.
Or complaining about not looking pretty. Or,
yeah, exactly. And the guys are always, you know, oh, we're macho.
And
you
getting
know.
In adventures. And, yeah.
Or just nerds.
Yeah, just nerds in general.
You don't usually see, I don't think, as many female nerds. It's usually either, yeah, like the hotshot guy who's a bit down his luck, or just like the nerd who's a loser.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I think a great show actually a while back was Ugly Betty, because Ugly Betty introduced, you know, an ugly girl nerd who was successful.
What's funny, though, is that that's only in America that they felt necessary that that even had to exist. Like, in most countries, it's not weird for a leading woman to be a good actress without being just stunningly beautiful as well. Like, she can just be there because she's a fabulous actress.
Which is hilarious, because she actually was at America Fair, actually is quite pretty.
So, in real life.
So despite the fact that her character is obviously made to look a certain way, it's ironic that despite that point, they didn't find someone who's naturally not classically attractive. They just changed it.
I mean, I do think perhaps it's a little easier for that person to play that role, not feeling like they cast me because I'm butt ugly.
So your character's Ugly Betty, and don't think too much about what that means for yourself.
Don't think of the name. Don't focus on
all
the name.
Just ignore this. In your audition, we saw a lot of what we think is good reflection, introspection. I think we could bring a good story to the character based on perhaps your own experiences. I'm not trying to say anything too risque or suggestive.
Well, like, I think in that case, when you're casting, that's when casting becomes very important. You know, because American casting is very much based around looks, you know, how you look and things like that. You know, you
what's
have
gonna to sell.
yeah, what's going to sell, right? And so when it comes to something like Ugly Betty, it actually comes down to acting ability. Like, how good can you act, you know? And
act for me.
Yeah, basically. It's just like, come on, boy, do it. But no, I mean, like, that's what you get in this industry a lot of the time, is a lot of whipping and a lot of people just being like, you know, it's just like, act for me. Do it. Be sad.
Yeah. All right, let's do, I think I'm going to do this one next. I like this one.
Somebody's booking a holiday.
Shout out for us.
Somewhere hot and cheap.
Let me take a look. All right, got a special right now. 2 weeks, very hot, lots of sun.
Oh, and where's that?
The sun.
No, that's too hot for me. I have very fair skin. How about somewhere historical?
Ooh, looks like we've got 1 week, all inclusive, very historical.
Oh, and where's that?
Auschwitz. The tour is extra, but it does come with complimentary showers.
No, it's okay. I've already been there. How about somewhere cultural?
Ooh, I've got 10 days in Tiananmen Square still available. And they've got rid of all the tanks.
Let's put that in the maybe pile.
Ooh, how about a tour of the Amazon focused on the rubber trade? You get to see all the spots where European colonialists committed genocide against the indigenous population. And it comes with a free hat.
See, I don't wear hats.
Okay, this one. Spokane, Washington. It's hot, it's cheap, and it's very quiet.
Well, why is it so quiet?
Because it's shit.
See, I don't like any of these options.
You know, you're right. There's nowhere to go, really, is there? No. You know what? I think you'd be better just staying here. You could spend your money on something better, like maybe a meal for me and you. Maybe a bottle of wine. Maybe some health insurance for me. Wouldn't that be a better way to spend your money?
I guess you're right.
Yeah. Now pass me your wallet and I'll book us a nice table. Okay, I've got 2 seats still available at the Thai restaurant down the road, but we do need to bring our own plates. Actually, you never know what you're going to get with a Thai for this.
Alright, yeah, so there we were, booking a holiday. Yeah, that sketch is purely fun. Like, there's not really anything else to that one in terms of satire, but I like it just because it has a good flow. Like, every other line's a gag, and yeah, I don't know, it's just a very fun one. What's weird, though, I think about it, is that when we started, like, it was, those last, like, 4 or 5 lines weren't even there. Where it really ended up and where it goes. Like, that was something we just sort of found in rehearsal and practice. And also just me thinking about it, going, okay, well, what can we add? And yeah, I think it tied off nicely in the end.
It did. The idea of the callback is a fun one. You always like to have callbacks, especially in a live show, I think, where people are, I mean, you have to pay attention unless it's just goddamn boring.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
it's like, oh, cool, callback.
Well, we had a friend that showed up to the show late on the first show, and he didn't see the first 2 sketches. And then he watched that one, and then he was like, "Oh, what's the tie line?" And then another friend that was in the show, she, you know, goes like, "Oh, they did a callback to that joke," and he's like, "Oh, I completely missed out." You know, so it's always nice when you're watching a show not to be late sometimes, because you might miss something. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because that is the technique that is. You like, it's something that's not necessarily as popular in television. It's very popular in stand-up, the callback. Like, it always makes your show look really professional and slick. You know, shows that you've clearly thought about the material a lot. But there are a couple of shows that do it. Like, Archer is full of
Community,
just,
I hear, is
references.
One of those ones.
Yeah, Community as well. So, yeah.
I think Futurama as well did a few callbacks here and there.
Even, like, Seinfeld, like, a lot of the jokes... that when you first start watching Seinfeld, you're like, why are people laughing at that?
And then you're like, oh, it's because they always, like, Elaine pushing Jerry you know, all the time.
Yeah,
or
yeah, yeah.
Her taking food out of the fridge, mm-hmm. or Kramer taking food. And, you know, just all these little things that are just callbacks for people who watch it all the time.
Yeah,
really.
And it makes it more enjoyable to actually watch a show because it feels like you're part of an inside joke. You know, like,
makes
you know,
like in group.
Yeah. It's like when you have a joke with a group of friends, you know, and you're always just like, oh, yeah, that was funny. Remember that, you know, and people are kind of like, what the fuck are you laughing about? You know, and then but like when you do it on a show and you keep bringing it back, people are always like, oh, yeah, like that joke. Oh, yeah. It's like you feel like you're part of a community, for instance. You know, it's always fun to have those kind of like small insight things.
Totally. All right. Next up tonight, we're going to play. This one's for Connor. It was a great
G Factor.
Did a great job of this. No. We are going to play.
You see the point of an accent there.
I said Connor in a weird way.
Connor,
we are going to do. We'll do T Factor afterwards. Yeah. But first up, we're going to play Urban Wilderness.
Oh yeah.
It's a British nature documentary focusing on the ever-growing urban wilderness.
And welcome to Urban Wilderness. My name is Sir David Squatterborough, and tonight we track the movements of the majestic urban cougar. I am currently situated in my carefully chosen viewing spot, the VIP booth of my local nightclub. Ah, I think I see one now. Yes, there is one approaching my hiding spot. You can spot one by her distinct camouflage of leopard skin and copious amounts of face paint. Her claws are distinctly long and painted an unflattering acid green. She strides across the open landscape atop of 4-inch heels designed to lengthen her meaty cankles. She is alert and hungry, a side effect of her overconsumption of leafy greens and diet pills. She seems to spot a group of potential prey. A troop of urban gorillas. Or in Latin, Nuculus dragonus. The urban gorilla has equally distinct characteristics. Its back is broad, its brain is little used, and its collar is popped. The cougar doesn't attack right away. She is waiting to spot the weakest of the group that can be easily separated from the pack. They will then be defenseless to the cougar's moves, which have been perfected over decades of clubbing. One has to wonder, though, why she hasn't found greener pastures. Perhaps she likes being alone. Maybe she hasn't found the one. Or more likely, she's just really annoying. The gorillas have started what seems to be a sort of tribal dance. And I think I hear them shouting what sounds like,
"So much mass, brah!"
And the other responds, such a beautiful language. The gorillas now begin to migrate across the dance floor. However, one has been left face down. On the table. The cougar begins to canter towards him, but disaster strikes as one of her heels snaps. She spills forward and gold jewelry is everywhere. The gorilla perks up, he senses the danger, and away he goes, running for his life. Good lad. He shall survive another day. The cougar lets out a roar of frustration. And limps away defeat. I'm Sir David Squatterborough, and join us again for more Urban Wilderness.
I do have to say, I think that's like one of my most favorite sketches.
Yeah?
In the show.
It's just pure fun. And it's like, yeah. It's got some fun. It's like, it just messes with reality.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, yeah, it's just like pure, just like fun. There's some satire, I guess, but it's just a good time. It's immersive.
My mom, talking about that one, was like, yeah, just like, she's like, I know those women and we've all seen them in clubs. And she's like, that's why it's so good.
Well, like, whereas we're thinking like, I've seen those dudes in clubs.
Well, like you, it's fun because like I don't know, but like for myself, like when I see those people, I do think of animals. Like, you know, I do think of
the meat factory that is a nightclub, because you can't talk; it's so loud in there.
Yeah,
that all you're going on is physical looks in your attempts to get people. That's why, see, when I that's my problem in nightclubs. Never pick up in a nightclub because I'm just left with my face. Then so
that's why when you're at a nightclub, and this is a strategy I particularly tend to use.
I'm not putting on a bow tie.
No. Well, that is more the fool you. But you communicate through kissing.
It's true. The one time I did go to a nightclub, it was just I did end up.
Is that why I stopped getting served when I was at the nightclub?
Yeah.
Also, you making out with the bartender?
Well, I was trying to get a drink, but
Also explains why I am not at nightclubs, really, ever.
Yeah. My favorite line in that sketch though is just the bit where it's like, maybe she's not found the one. Maybe she's just really annoying.
Yeah. I mean, you go around hunting for young men, and it's like maybe you are. Maybe you just are.
The fantastic bit is there's actually a genuinely interesting story behind that cougar. Mm-hmm. Like you could extrapolate, not even in urban wilderness, but even in real life. Although I think what we could do, I think we could actually make something really great out of that in a more long form format, is explore what led her to this particular part of her life. She's, 40, 45, looking for some, 20-something-year-old men. She's not really up to style with her, the way she dresses. Yeah, I think there's a story to be told there, and I'd love to hear it.
I definitely would agree. Like something in the similar vein, just Sir Squattenborough, just like following the daily activities of an urban cougar.
Just the biography of the cougar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lucille was born in 1873.
Okay, guys, we haven't got long, so we've got a couple more we can play. So do you want to hear? We could do either Tear Factor, Pencil You In Ring, Mugged, Bond, or Folky Folks?
Bond, Pencil In, or Mugged?
I definitely like Mugged, and Pencil You In Ring is definitely one of my favorites.
Okay, all right, we'll do Pencil You In, and then we'll do Mugged. All right, here we go.
Congo. But it's okay, I know a guy. How much is it?
Tell you what, just give me your whole wallet. I'll give you that ring. And then, what's the...
Hortensia.
And then Hortensia will give you her heart. Unless you change your mind later.
I can't wait to see the look on her face when I don't get down on one knee and make a non-committal expression of my love.
Romance! Romance has never been more alive, sir.
So, there we go. That was Pencil Your In Ring. I don't know. That one, again, is pretty straightforward, really. It's just an absurdist sketch, well and truly. I don't think there's any point to it. It's not funny. I don't know.
It'd be interesting to try, obviously, we have the audio from the entire show. And so go back and kind of begin to sort of classify each sketch, whether it is, more absurdist or more satirical or more deadpan or more realist. And kind of see what got the better responses, and see if there's any way to maximize the things that worked, and yet still fit in the thematic elements and the satirical elements that are the nuances of clever witty comedy.
I mean,
combine them in something that's like a super form.
Super form.
But the thing is, it's not that formulaic in the fact that what works one night doesn't necessarily work the next night.
There's a point to that.
There's something to be said for having a good sense of what most people find funny, and that's what I try to do, but it isn't that straightforward. And I think it's good to have a mixture of those elements. I don't think we need to focus on one area in particular.
It's interesting, the question of stylism, of a distinct style. So you can take Mighty Boosh, for instance, right? It's a great sketch comedy group. They have a very distinct way that they do their comedy, and
Kids
it's worth,
in the hall as well.
Exactly. And so it's interesting to consider,
what is our style, or
should we have a style? And if we want to, what is it?
I think I know what our style is, which is that it's about pacing. It's a fast style of sketch. It's joke dense, and it's witty. But somewhat edgy. It's not just trying to be crass and there's barely any swearing even in our show.
Not the one we did.
Yeah.
No. But if you look at Kids in the Hall, because I did a workshop with Kevin McDonald, and the way they wrote sketches was they improvised a scene. So they got ideas, and they would improvise a scene, and then after they improvised it, they would write out what they did. And then they would redo the scene, and then they would condense it a little bit more, and then they would have a sketch.
Add some jokes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you guys, you tend to write your sketches. I don't think you improvise your scenes at all beforehand.
Never. The whole point of it is that it's completely scripted. And then, we ad-lib and, play with it a little bit. And, smooth out the edges. But there's a core sense of the idea going in.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that is your style. Yeah. Kevin McDonald was saying, their style was that they would improvise it, and then they would, work it out. So you guys are strictly the writing side of things. Nothing wrong with that. You have good writing.
Speaking of which, let's play another sketch.
Fabulous content from
trying to get me to say anal over the radio.
Nigel's organic chicken. We treat them better than our kids. That's two men meeting a street.
Yeah.
go. That was Mugged, which is how we decided to close out the show, with a short, sweet
one. It had a nice spot of energy, I think, to really just close it out all well and good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you and Nick, you just had that, like, great just be like, oh, yeah, yeah.
And what you obviously couldn't see was that, as he says, remember, I stabbed you a little. I then lift my shirt up, which is covered in blood, and point to my stomach. Going, yeah, yeah.
I really enjoyed that. Like, it was short, it was sweet. It was kind of like, you know, there's a nice big payoff at the end, which I really enjoyed about that sketch. You know, it was just like there's small little bits in there where you go, like, oh, yeah, that's funny. You know, oh, I sucked him off, whatever, right? And then all of a sudden,
it's weird,
right? It's like, don't you remember I stabbed you? And it's like, right! And the fact that you end with it, just like, how's it going? It's just nice.
Yeah, it's like, I kind of like it for the fact that it kind of subverts expectation, like, several times on top of each other. Like, you're just like, okay, well, now I don't understand. Oh, no, I don't understand.
Yeah. It's always like that moment where it's just like you're kind of chasing the answer. You're just like, I totally know. No, I don't.
Step ahead of you.
Yeah, exactly. Which is nice. It's always that's always good comedy, you know.
Yeah, and it is. It's just short and sweet, and it is pacey. Unlike Hookers, which is kind of a bit weird. It's the same kind of length sketch, I think.
Yeah,
but you don't know it until you get to the end. I think that time, there's you can be laughing along the way and kind of know where you're laughing. That's just dead baby sword. You suck me off.
That's it. With that one, the payoff at the end is great. But I think that's why Mugged is a better sketch than Buying a Hooker is because there's far more payout before the end.
Yeah,
even though perhaps the end payout maybe is slightly better on Buying a Hooker.
There's more of a build-up. Yeah. You know?
And it's funny because that's something I'm always quite scared of is having too much build-up because in comedy, it's all about the economy of words, which is you have to say the least amount of words to get to the joke as possible because the longer the build-up, the bigger the payout has to be to make it worth it. You know, there's nothing worse than hearing a long joke that isn't funny.
Yeah, well, I think that's definitely very viable in, like, stand-up and sketch comedy. Like, those two niche of the worlds, like, especially when you're writing it, you know, you have to make sure that it is condensed, that it is...
Even sitcoms, though.
Yeah.
Even sitcoms should be a joke every 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, then go write drama.
It's interesting that you say that because you watch kids' shows, and kids' shows nowadays, like the live ones, the live studio ones, they're the sitcom format.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you watch...
Well, those Disney ones were when we were kids as well.
They still are.
Yeah, yeah.
They still are. They're still of that sitcom-ish format. And, like, I don't know. Some of the writing sometimes, like, I don't want to say it's all bad, but, like, sometimes the writing is just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, multicam
but
shows.
But that's the trick, is, like, having joke density, but also making sure that the jokes are worth it and it isn't just quantity over quality. There's a fine balancing act. I think the more time you give to a particular piece, the better sense you can be able to... You work the density and the quality together
in
a way that's smooth, and yet every payoff is cool. And it's not like, oh, that's kind of cheap. Go, I don't know. Or like, yeah, they're kind of a cheap kind of get out kind of joke.
Yeah.
But the other thing too is that a lot of those shows have laugh tracks, and laugh tracks are actually not a bad thing. A lot of people hate laugh tracks, and I'm not the biggest fan, but I think they do work when the comedy's funny, because then people are laughing along. So you, and if you've got the sound turned up loud, it feels like there's people in the room, and then you're laughing along. But it sucks when you're watching something bad and the laugh track comes on. And you're like, but that's not funny, and you're more aware that it's not funny and that it was meant to be a joke because of the laugh track.
Well, the one thing that I do actually like about laugh tracks is that they space out the jokes so that you don't miss dialogue. You know, that's the hard thing to do when you're doing a live sketch show is spacing out the jokes between the laughs, because you're always like, I don't know if this is going to get a laugh, this might get a laugh, you know, at least with the sketch comedy or like.
Yeah, but like, I think if you like, I think me and you did a good job in that in Pencil You In Ring, which we played tonight, is a good example of that, where there were some big laughs in that one. And we just took our time and waited. And, you know, you don't even have to wait for it to be completely silent. You just have to wait to, you can hear it tailing off. And then you just, you go in with it. And that's, it is, that, you know, it was something that I talked about in rehearsal in a few weeks that, you know, I've talked to you guys about. But I knew it was something we couldn't really practice until the night of.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's fine. It's something, it's a big thing we can take away from this one and really focus on. And this is why I always say, I have said before that if you want to do comedy, and not whether you want to write it or you want to act it, do stand-up comedy, because that's where you learn comic timing, and that's where you learn
pacing and how to, yeah, because it's something I struggled with doing stand-up, mm-hmm. was having the nerve to just stand there and let the laughter die, or to even just wait for the laughter,
yeah,
in case it didn't come, you know, just, you're like, because it's so much more blatant in stand-up that this is meant to be a joke, whereas in a comedy you're like, this could just be the dialogue,
mm-hmm.
And it could, you know, so it's, yeah, it's a tough thing to do. All right, it is 10 o'clock, so we will basically have to wrap it up now. We're going to play one more sketch before we go. We're going to play our other ad, Ball Jazzling. But we will be back next week with a brand new episode of White Noise, half-hour sketch comedy. And we better do some debating and some chatting and some current event stuff, because, my God, a lot's happened since November 1st when we went off the air. Holy shit. We might have to do a long one next week. Connor won't be here.
Yeah, I'm not gonna be joining
bloody
you.
Bloody going to England.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I'm sort of like a live correspondent.
Can we? No, you're fine. wait till January.
I'll phone in. please.
I don't think we'll do some Christmas sketches next week, because it might be the last show before Christmas, or we might have one more. What time? What day is it? Yes.
What do you think, audience? Should we have another show next week?
I'm looking at the calendar.
Can we get a caller to tell us?
So, yeah, we'll definitely have a show next week, but then that might be it till the end of December. So, will be some Christmas stuff next week. Otherwise, have a lovely week. We'll see you then. Thanks for tuning in. This was White Noise. And enjoy the last sketch. This is Ball Jazzling.
Bye.
From the people who brought you Flintstones Chewable Ritalin and the world's sharpest shake, we now present to you the male pajazzling sensation, Ball Jazzle. Using our Europeans, maybe even literally with our vast array of fake gemstones and skin-irritating lube. In 5 minutes, you can go from average Joe to dangling low. It's a shit alone. It's everything you want it to be. And it may make it difficult to be, but you won't regret it. However, we cannot guarantee it. So have it now and Ball Jazzle your tackle. For the sadness, maybe you discover ear rust, ear crust, elongated testicle sac, septicemia, diarrhea, gonorrhea, and John Wayne.
About time! I'm sick of being jealous of my sister's vajazzling.
Hempology 101 is a student-run organization here to educate the public about the benefits of hemp and cannabis. Fast fact! Hemp is a renewable, sustainable source of food and fiber. Fast fact! Your body contains anandamide, which is part of the same family of substances as THC. To learn more, look us up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/hempology101ubc, or come to one of our great events.